Still discussing gender ideology under the broader umbrella of wokeism. I have a couple of more sermons on the gender issue, and then, Lord willing, one more after that on the other two ideologies that we are going to discuss. One of the fruits of gender ideology, or probably the ultimate fruit that gets born from it, is the mutilation of children. That's what ends up happening with this ideology, is that when children end up taking it to, you know, to like the fullest extent, they usually end up getting body parts taken off. And it's absolutely disgusting. And I want to talk about this. I want to give you some quotes here to show what is happening out there, in case you didn't know, and show you how evil this is. Jesus taught us in Matthew 18, verses 6 through 10, that people who harm little children, especially his little children, have a sore judgment awaiting them. And I would not want to be these gender therapists. I would not want to be these counselors, these teachers that are promoting this. I certainly wouldn't want to be the surgeons or the medical people that are doing this mutilation. These people are just desperately wicked and evil. There's no other way to describe them. And they have a sore punishment awaiting them. Matthew 18, 6 through 10, Jesus said, "But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea." And that's exactly what this ideology that is taught in the media, that's taught in social media, that's taught in the schools, that's promoted in medical establishments, in therapy offices. It is offending little ones, some of whom believe in Jesus. And those who do that deserve to be, they deserve the death penalty, to be have a millstone hanged around their neck and be cast into the sea. Jesus goes on to say, "Woe unto the world because of offenses. For it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee." Now, if these surgeons want to start cutting body parts off, cut their own off, right? Don't cut the body parts of children off. If you're offended by your body parts, then go ahead and surgically remove them if you want. Of course, this is what not Jesus is speaking spiritually here. If your hand is causing you to sin, you mortify that sin, which is represented by your hand that is doing it, or your eyes that are doing it, right? He's teaching us to, you know, whatever you need to do to stop the sin, do it. Anyway, let's continue. "It is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into hellfire. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven." So Jesus puts a high premium on his little children, little ones that believe in him, and anybody that would teach them something that would destroy their faith or destroy their lives is evil and under sore judgment. And it's not just this ideology, it's all of the ideologies that I've been talking about in this series. Added to that would be the doctrine of evolution and things like that. Anything that would destroy a child's faith or cause him distress, somebody that does that is under severe judgment. Now, there are wicked doctors out there, and I put doctors in air quotes, because these people are not doctors, because a doctor is somebody who fundamentally, I mean, this is like doctoring 101, keeps the Hippocratic Oath to first do no harm. If you are a doctor who removes body parts of children, you are not a doctor. You are a monster. But there are so-called doctors out there that recommend and perform double mastectomies, that's where removing both breasts, or so-called top surgery is what they call it, a euphemism, on teenage children who are confused about their gender. And I'm going to give you an example of one such man here and another such woman who, she's named Dr. Joanna Olson Kennedy. She's the medical director of the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. She was recorded on video saying the following thing that I'm going to read you here in just a second. I mean, what a joke. She is the director of the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development. That's a contradiction of terms. You don't have a center for trans youth health. If you want to get these kids healthy, you make sure that they're not trans, right? You're not going to treat trans youth and make them healthy. That's ridiculous. You treat them by showing them a better way to fix their mental health problems and get out of this bondage. But anyway, this is from Abigail Schreier in her book, Irreversible Damage, on page 172. Quote, her words, hair-raising as a fire alarm. She's talking about the words of Dr. Olson Kennedy. Quote, this is what Olson Kennedy said, recorded on video, caught on video saying this. So what we do know is that adolescents actually have the capacity to make reasoned, logical decision, to make a reasoned, logical decision, she says. Now this shows that she's a complete idiot right off the bat. Anybody that thinks that adolescents have the capacity to make a reasoned, logical decision about anything important is a moron. I mean, that's clearly not the case. Give your adolescent the opportunity or the choice to make a reasoned, logical choice for what's for dinner tonight, and you'll find out that they don't have that capacity yet, obviously. Or give them the choice of what they want to do, if they want to go to a party or if they want to sit at home and read a good book, right? Obviously, they don't have, you know, their reasoning capabilities have not matured yet. Everybody knows that, that's has children or that's seen children or that's ever been one, right? Did I have reason and logical decision-making capabilities when I was an adolescent, when I was a young teenager, or even an old teenager for that matter? Absolutely not. And I doubt the rest of you did either, unless you're some kind of a weird person. Anyway, she continues, and here's the other thing about chest surgery. If you want breasts at a later point in your life, you can go and get them. This is what kind of a desperately wicked, stupid person we're dealing with here. Just like flippantly, oh yeah, I mean, just, you know, get your breasts taken off. And if you want them, you just go back and get them. You know, like you're going to get the same thing that you lost. You're not. You're going to get a lump of silicone that has no feeling and no, certainly can't breastfeed. And what a fool. It's a shocking statement, this is Abigail goes on to say. It's a shocking statement, the sort of things parents of these girls send around to each other to prove what sort of monstrous ideology they're up against. Doctors can't really be that flippant about recommending girls for double mastectomy, can they? Surely someone who believes in recommending girls as young as 13 for top surgery, as Dr. Olson Kennedy does, takes that responsibility quite seriously. Yes, 13-year-old girls can undergo top surgery in California. That's her words, not mine. 13-year-old girls can have a double mastectomy if just because they want it, because they don't feel comfortable in their body and they want to look like a boy. This is how insane people are. Surely such doctors recognize the patient's profound loss, even if they ultimately recommend it, she asks. Well, then she emailed Dr. Olson Kennedy to see if she wanted to clarify her statement. Because she was caught on tape, maybe it was, you know, just a moment of indiscretion, maybe she was taken out of context, or, you know, all the other stupid excuses that people have for evil things that they say. So she gave her a chance to redeem herself. Would you like to clarify your statement, she writes to her. And Olson Kennedy responds only to ask what publication she wrote for and never responded again. So obviously, she didn't want to clarify her statement. She stands by it, apparently, showing what a fool she is. This woman should be like on the, you know, FBI 10 most wanted, you know, for terrorists in this country. And then there's a reprobate named Dr. Hugh McLean. He is a wicked man who prides himself in mutilating children. Listen to this. This is again from Schreier's book. Top surgery is a very popular procedure for natal female adolescents who identify as men. I spoke with Dr. Hugh McLean, a prominent top surgeon in Toronto who's been performing masculinizing mastectomies on biological women since a patient first requested one in 1999. Quote, this is from Dr. Hugh McLean. The most gratifying thing seems to be seeing all the smiles, he told me. Quote, you know, it's a group of patients that's so eager to have their surgery. It just seems to be gratifying in terms of their positive results, their happiness, and their well-being. Dr. McLean told me he personally performed, quote, way over 1,000, unquote, top surgeries in total on patients as young as 16. This man's a monster. And he's the most dangerous kind of monster because he has deceived himself into thinking he's doing a good thing and he's actually helping people. He just sees all the smiles and they're all so happy. It's because they're deluded. They're crazy. They're like, you know, anorexic girls that look at themselves in the mirror and their skin and bones and think they're fat, right? These girls are delusional. And he is exacerbating that. And he's making them happy temporarily until probably the next day when they get home and realize what a stupid thing they've done. Or maybe not the next day. Maybe it's a year or two or 10. And they realize they've totally wrecked their lives. This man deserves to be in prison. Dr. McLean actually feels pretty great about what he's doing for patients. So good, in fact, that his practice's Instagram account features a picture of his associate top surgeon wearing a Santa's cap and holding two white vats, each labeled breast tissue, apparently just removed from his patients, delivering Christmas joy, it seems, two mastectomies at a time. This is what an evil man this is. And he's not alone. There's tons of them out there. People do this, you know, surgeons do this every day. Top surgeons like Dr. McLean do not require a therapist referral. Their patients are admitted for surgery based on their own desire to appear more like a boy or a, quote, non-binary, unquote, person. His website states, quote, for us, the diagnosis is made by the patient, not the doctor. In the same way that a patient seeking breast enlargement is the one who diagnoses her own breast as being too small. But surely there are girls who misdiagnose their own gender dysphoria. They aren't doctors, after all. His patients, as we have seen, come as young as 16. Quote, have you turned patients away? Abigail asks. I ask him, she says. Yes, he said, but so rarely that I can't actually think of specific cases. So rarely. He's done over 1,000 of them, and he can't even remember a specific case that he turned down. Anybody, any girl that comes in there, I don't know, with or without parents' permission, I'm not sure, but any girl that comes in there, any girl that's basically gone through puberty and has breasts and wants rid of them because she wants to look like a boy, hey, she self-diagnoses, and who is he to stand in her way? That's what I'm telling you. This is an evil ideology. These people are devil-possessed. Now, I would say that the thing most responsible for this whole transgender craze and for much harm, much other harm that is done to children, are these damnable smartphones and social media. That is what is fueling this whole thing. And I am absolutely certain that there would be no transgender craze were it not for the internet, smartphones, and social media. I'm absolutely certain of that. Because there wasn't any such thing before the advent of these. And you can see it. It's basically pinpointed, like, to the day that the iPhone was released. Pretty much. And I'll give you some quotes here. Maybe not to the day, but you'll see a stark contrast between before the iPhone and before social media, and after it. These things are harmful, dangerous, especially for children. They're turning people, especially children, into brain-dead, unsocial zombies. And they are. I've seen it. We've all seen it. I hope you've seen it. I hope you haven't had your head in your phone so much that you haven't even noticed that we live among an entire generation full of zombies with their phones. You go to a restaurant, and what do you see? People on their phones. You see a family, mother, father, children, sitting at a table. Just start paying attention. How many times are they all on their phones? Or children, all together, young people together, all on their phones. I've been to people's homes where their children did not have smartphones. And the children were social and eager to have visitors. Like, they were actually excited to have adult visitors come over, and the children all sit around the table or, you know, the kitchen or whatever, and they're like excited, like, oh, adults are here. We get to talk with adults. This is fun. You don't see children do that anymore today. Hardly ever. Why? Because they have their stupid smartphones. And then I've been to homes of children, people that have children that have smartphones, and those children couldn't care less that there are visitors. Those children are off. They don't want to talk or visit with the visitors. And if they do, they're sitting there on their phones or they're up in their bedroom or whatever. They don't care. They couldn't care less if you have visitors. Like I said, we're turning this whole generation into a bunch of zombies, unsocial zombies. It's terrible. Teen depression and suicide has risen dramatically since the advent of the iPhone and social media in the mid to late 2000s. I'm glad that I am old enough to remember, I'm just sounding like some old guy, I'm glad I'm old enough to remember life before social media, life before smartphones, life before cell phones. I did not have a cell phone in high school, and neither did any, I don't think there was a single cell phone in my high school the year I graduated and prior to that. I graduated in 2000. Not one of my friends had a smartphone, not one of my friends had a cell phone. You remember the old Nokia, the great big things, right? Not one of my friends had one of those. We lived out in the middle of the boonies. I mean, they were brand new. They were just coming out at that time anyway. And they didn't work where we lived anyway. We lived way, way out. But anyway, I remember life before cell phones, smartphones, social media, before the internet, for that matter. The internet was primitive when I was in high school. I did get to play around on it a little bit, got myself in trouble on it, as I'll talk about later. But pretty much, I grew up without the internet. At home, no internet, no computer. My mom had one when I would go over to her house. I used that to get myself in trouble. That was about it. But very, you know, very, very limited. But anyway, I'm glad that I remember what life was like before all this foolishness has taken over. But kids today, they don't know that. All they know are smartphones, social media, that they've grown up with their whole lives. Their parents probably gave them a smartphone to play with when they were infants. I would say just about all parents do this, which is insane, by the way, and very destructive for your children, very destructive for their mental development. But the kids have literally grown up with a smartphone in their hand from infancy. And then as soon as they're pretty much old enough to tap with their fingers, their parents buy them one. And I'm not even joking. When I drove the school bus, and this was 6 years ago, and I'm sure it's worse now, these little kids, first graders, second graders, they all had smartphones. It's pitiful. Pitiful. Like to wring their parents' necks. I quote here from Abigail Schreier in her book again. Between 2009 and 2017, the number of high schoolers who contemplated suicide increased by 25%. What happened in 2009? What was the difference between 2009 and 2017? Smartphones. There were no smartphones. Nobody had smartphones before 2009. The iPhone came out in 2007, and kids didn't have them. Most kids didn't have them back then. This is direct correlation. Suicide contemplation goes up 25%. The number of teens diagnosed with clinical depression grew 37% between 2005 and 2014. The rise of social media. YouTube came out in 2006, I believe it was. Facebook came out in right around maybe the next year or something. MySpace was around, I think, in right around 2005 or so. I don't remember exactly. In the worst hit, experiencing depression at a rate three times that of boys were teenage girls. Lest one assume that these girls are merely reporting their depression in greater numbers and not necessarily experiencing more of it, Haid, this is a researcher she's referencing here, Haid points out that the average rates of self-harm reflect the same spike, an increase of 62% since 2009, all among teenage girls. Among preteen girls aged 10 to 14, which I'm not sure why you call 13 and 14-year-old preteens, but anyway, you get the point, right? 10 to 14-aged children, rates of self-harm are up 189% since 2010, nearly triple what they were only 6 years prior, before smartphones. I think it's pretty obvious what's causing all this harm, all this suicidal ideation, all this depression, all this anxiety. What happened? Podcast host Joe Rogan asked Haight. Why the sudden spike in anxiety, depression, and self-harm? Social media, was Haight's immediate reply. As Twenge wrote for the Atlantic, it's not an exaggeration to describe iGen, otherwise known as Generation Z, that's kids that are in their mid-20s and below as of today. Kids that have grown up with all this crap their whole lives. It's not an exaggeration to describe iGen as being on the brink of the worst mental health crisis in decades. Much of this deterioration can be traced to their phones. The iPhone was released in 2007. By 2018, a decade later, 95% of teens had access to a smartphone, and 45% reported being online almost constantly, quote-unquote. And I completely believe this statistic. I'm surprised it's not higher, because you watch the average kid, and they're on their phone almost constantly. For that matter, watch the average adult, and he or she is on his or her phone almost constantly. Tumblr, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, all very popular with teens, host a wide array of visual tutorials and pictorial inspiration to self-harm. Anorexia, also called thinspiration or thinspo, cutting, and suicide. Posting one's experiences with any of these afflictions offers the chance to win hundreds, even thousands of followers. Anorexia, cutting, and suicide have all spiked dramatically since the arrival of the smartphone. I don't get the cutting thing, but this is what teens do that are distressed and depressed and anxious. They cut themselves. They literally cut themselves. I remember seeing a woman, a cashier at a restaurant or something, and her arms were just covered in scars. And I'm sure that's what it was. I'm sure she was, you know, had cut herself probably as a teenager. I personally know teenagers who have done this to themselves. And it's all at least exacerbated, if not inspired, by what they see on the internet. I continue to quote here from Schreier's book. Two patterns stood out. First, the clear majority, 65%, of the adolescent girls who had discovered transgender identity in adolescence, quote, out of the blue, unquote, had done so after a period of prolonged social media immersion. Second, the prevalence of transgender identification within some of the girls' friend groups was more than 70 times the expected rate. So when these girls come out as trans out of the blue, it's not out of the blue. It's because they've had immersion to social media. And then their friend groups have a huge percentage of girls that come out doing the same thing, because contagion spreads among girls very easily. And I'll give you a reason for that based on what Schreier said in her book here later. In the section of her book called What Should We Do for Our Girls, Schreier's first prescription to save children from the transgender craze was, don't get your kid a smartphone. The best thing that you can do, of course, outside of teaching them the scriptures, right? The best thing that you can do is don't get your kid a smartphone or take it away from them. She says, parents will balk, parents will groan, most consider it. Consider this an unimaginable amputation. How could I separate a teen from her iPhone? But in terms of obviousness, this one's not even hard. It practically writes itself. Nearly every novel problem teenagers face traces itself back to 2007 and the introduction of Steve Jobs' iPhone. every novel problem. Not every problem teenagers face. Teenagers have always faced problems. Every novel problem. Every problem that's happening in this generation that didn't happen in previous generations, every one of them can be traced back to the iPhone and social media. Makes perfect sense to me. I believe that. In fact, the explosion in self-harm can be so precisely pinpointed to the introduction of this one device that researchers have little doubt that it is the cause. If I had told you in 2007 that one device would produce a sudden skyrocketing in self-harm among teens and tweens, you would likely have said, "No way is my kid getting one." And yet here we are. The statistical explosion of bullying, cutting, anorexia, depression, and the rise of sudden transgender identification is owed to the self-harm instruction, manipulation, abuse, and relentless harassment supplied by a single smartphone. These things are highly dangerous. I believe giving your kid a smartphone is as dangerous as giving him heroin. Highly, highly dangerous. Now, the scripture teaches us not to follow a multitude to do evil. In this case, to your children. Exodus 23 and verse 2. I don't have as much scripture in this series because I'm talking about, you know, there's a lot of this, a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of sources that are talking about what's going on in the culture today, but I do have some scripture. We can be guided by it. This is an old commandment that the Lord gave Israel. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. But parents will say, but all their friends have one. That should make you think right there. If all their friends have one, and you know that the world is nuts, right? Maybe that should give you some pause and think, if all of their friends have one, and these things are known to be extremely dangerous, maybe I should consider before giving my child one. Parents should seriously consider the potential harm that could be done to their children before allowing them to have a smartphone. Turn with me to Proverbs. I got a few verses for you. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 25. You see, parents' duty is not to go with the flow, but it's often to go against the flow for your children's sake. That's what being a parent is. Being a parent is not just saying, well, you know, I'll just kind of let things happen and see where they go. I'll just let my children get whatever everybody else's children gets. I'll let them do whatever everybody else's children does and just see how it turns out. That is not parenting. Parenting is being wise and circumspect and considering the dangers that might be out there and thinking, do I want to subject my child to this? Do I want to let them go in the direction that everybody else is? Parenting is making hard decisions that your children will likely thank you for later on in life and hate you for in the present. That's what parenting is all about. Now you say, what do you know? Well, don't believe me then. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you don't want to believe me because I'm not a parent, then don't believe me. Proverbs 4, 25 through 27. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. In general, we ought to be pondering the path that we take. And we especially ought to be pondering the path that we are leading our children on. If you just float through this world like a rudderless ship and just follow wherever the current takes you, you know where you're going, right? Straight to hell. That's where. Proverbs 14 and verse 15. Proverbs 14:15. The simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his going. See, prudent people don't believe everything they hear. Prudent people look well to their going. They're paying attention to where they're going, to the decisions they're making, what they're doing, and how much more so important for their children. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. See, prudent people will foresee evil and hide themselves from it. Proverbs 22:3, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now, a prudent person could have looked back in 2007 and saw the iPhone and saw social media and saw the evil that was coming. Now, it would take some smarts to do that because probably the average person, myself included, looked and thought, oh, this thing's cool. Wow. I mean, you can like swipe your finger on the screen and stuff moves. It's really neat. I mean, this thing's cool. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff with it. You can take the whole Radio Shack catalog and have everything in the Radio Shack catalog from the 1980s. You can have it all in this one phone. It can do everything for you. I mean, this thing's cool, right? So stupid people like myself back then thought, oh, this thing's cool. You know, weren't prudent enough to see, oh, this is going to be society changing. This is going to change the world. This is going to destroy people's lives. This is going to ruin children. This is going to make everybody antisocial. But somebody that was prudent and really smart back then could have seen that. Okay? Maybe most of us didn't see it back then. But anybody that can't see it today is an idiot. Because you can look back, you don't have to look back, you just look. Look. You can see what it's done to people. You don't need to be prudent. You don't even need to be smart. You see it. Right? So foreseeing the evil and hiding yourself, it's like open your eyes, it's right there. I mean, this doesn't take much intuition here. To give or allow your child to have a smartphone without severely locking it down is the equivalent of the following. But before I get into these things, I want to talk about this a little bit. If somebody is going to give their child a smartphone, which is a very bad idea, in my opinion, you better lock it down severely. And you can do that, right? If you don't know what you're doing, you could talk to somebody who does, Google it, whatever. You can figure it out. You can lock that thing down so that the child doesn't have access to the apps or to certain apps or to texting or to social media, can't download apps. You can do all kinds of stuff. I'd recommend you're going to give them an iPhone, lock it down so they can only use it as a phone. You think, well, that's stupid. Why would you spend $1,000? That's the first question. Why would you spend $1,000 on something like this for your child? That's insane. Why would you spend $1,000 or $700 or $600 or whatever just to give them a phone? Well, I agree. That's dumb, right? But if you're going to give them a smartphone, lock it down and let them just use it as a phone. Because you know what the excuse is, right? I guarantee you've heard this. I know I've heard it. I want them to be able to get a hold of me. You've all heard this excuse. You probably said it yourself, right? I want my children to be able to get a hold of me. It's important that they have a smartphone so they can get a hold of me, right? That is just an excuse, pure and simple. Because you know what? Unless your child is like hiking through the Sahara Desert or maybe climbing the Andes, there is going to be probably 10 smartphones within an arm's reach of that child at any given second of his life. There's always going to be a phone where he or she can call you at any moment, any time, more so than any time in history. You realize when I was a kid and when all you were kids, did we have to have a smartphone or even a cell phone so that we could get a hold of our parents if there was something happened? No, there was no such thing. Are we all still alive? Yep. Somehow we made it without having a smartphone carrying around on us all the time to get a hold of our parents if there's a problem. You know, there are like landline phones at people's houses. Well, if I send my child to somebody else's house and they need to get a hold of me, I want them to have their own smartphone. As if the parents don't have a phone that are there at the house, or the friends, or somebody, right? But if you must, lock it down so they can only use it for a phone. You think, well, that's a waste of money. Then get them a flip phone, if you must. Then they can get a hold of you, right? Then you have fulfilled the supposed reason for giving them a smartphone, so they can get a hold of you. You see, most parents won't do that, because it's not really about having to be able for their children to get a hold of them. Most parents aren't going to lock the iPhone down so it only works as a phone, so their children can get a hold of them, because it's not about getting a hold of them. It's about making sure that they have what the rest of their friends have, so that they don't look like weirdos, and that they can participate in all this foolishness. That's what it's really about, if we're going to be honest about it. Now, let me talk about what giving your child an unrestricted iPhone or smartphone or computer for that matter, what it's the equivalent of. It's the equivalent of giving your son a porn movie to watch. Literally is. No different. You give your son a smartphone or a computer with unrestricted access, it is no different than handing him a porn movie. No different. And you say, well, that's not true. You could hand him a porn movie, he doesn't have to watch it. You give your son a porn movie, maybe he won't watch it. What are the odds? What is the chance that if you give your son, your teenage son, a porn movie that he won't watch it? 99.99999% chance he's going to watch it. What are the odds if you give your son a smartphone or a computer with unrestricted access to the internet, what are the odds that he's going to watch porn on it? 99.99999%. Pretty much a guarantee. You say, oh no, not my son. Not my little cherub. Oh no, my son wouldn't do anything like that. Because he's made of different stuff than the rest of the human race is. My son would never watch porn. Oh no, no. If you think that, you are woefully deceived. Woefully deceived. It's the equivalent of giving him a Playboy to read. It's the equivalent of taking him to a strip club. It's the equivalent of taking your daughter to a drag show. It's the equivalent of taking your children to a raunchy comedy show. It's the equivalent of giving your son your old dial-up phone and paying for his 1-900 sex hotline call. Remember 1-900 numbers? I don't know if you remember. I don't even know if those are around anymore. It's the equivalent of that. It's the equivalent of taking your daughter to a one-on-one meeting with a transgender activist or therapist. It's the equivalent of taking your son to a party with worldly kids with no supervision. It's the equivalent of sending your children to the Church of Satan or a myriad of other false religious services. Because if your children happen to be religious, which most aren't, then they can find all kinds of wicked false doctrine on YouTube or the internet to be deceived by. It's the equivalent to allowing your son to hang out with kids with filthy mouths, because that's what's going to happen when he's chatting back and forth with his friends on social media. It's the equivalent of taking him to watch a violent fight, because that's the kind of evil he's going to see on there. Now, most parents wouldn't even consider letting their children do any of the things listed above. But they think nothing of giving them a smartphone where all of those types of things are accessible at the tap of a screen. All of that stuff is accessible. Make not provision for your children to fulfill the lusts of their flesh by giving them a smartphone and letting them have unrestricted use of the internet. Look at Romans 13 and verse 14. It's as dangerous as giving a little child a loaded handgun to play with, giving him a smartphone. Romans 13 and verse 14, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. This is written to us adults. We are not to make provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. We are to guard ourselves. Don't get ourselves in situations where we can make provision for the flesh. If you've got a temptation to drink, you stay away from the bar. If you've got a temptation to pornography, you stay off the internet. If it comes to that, you do something to stop that from happening. Well, with your children, you've got to do it for them because they don't have the sense to do it themselves. You give your kid a smartphone, he's going to be watching porn. I'd be willing to lay down big money on it. I'd be willing to lay down big money on it. Why am I so certain of that? Because I used to be one, and I didn't even have a smartphone. I had some dial-up computer, and I know what I did. You know what I did as soon as I got on the internet? Looked up porn. And I was a boy that went to church every Sunday of my life from birth until now. I was a, quote, Christian boy. I was that good boy that I'm sure my parents thought would never do something like that. If you think that your children will not use their phones to access evil things such as porn and the like, you are woefully naive and out of touch with reality. Now, mothers have an excuse for this, because mothers are not men and boys. Mothers do not understand how men and boys think. I mean, they understand a little bit. But mothers and women in general do not understand how men and boys think. Case in point, women wouldn't dress the way that they do if they understood how men think. If a woman, every time she wears a short skirt, short shorts, short shirt showing her cleavage, if she realized that pretty much every single man that looks at her is undressing her with his eyes, she wouldn't wear it. And women think, oh, that's horrible. Is that what men are doing? Yep, that's exactly what men are doing. I guarantee you, virtually every single one of them, that's what they're doing when they see you wearing that shirt with cleavage. But women don't understand how men think. Women don't understand how their teenage sons think. So a woman, you know, until you heard this sermon anyway, or something similar to it, you could have an excuse to think, oh, my son would never look at porn on his phone, because you don't understand how boys and men think. But fathers have no excuse. None. Because fathers are men, and fathers were once teenage boys, and fathers know how men and teenage boys think. At least they should. Men, what would you have done with a smartphone as a teenager? I know what I would have done with it. I'd have looked up porn on it. I know for an absolute fact that's exactly what I would have done. That's what all my friends would have done. And what do you think teenage boys are doing today on them? That very thing. That's what they're doing. Now, if a father, if a man would say, well, if I was a teenager and I had an iPhone, I would not be looking up porn. I would say there are three possibilities. There's a 99.9% chance you're either a liar, you have self-deceived yourself, or possibly you are an angel that we have been entertaining unawares for a long time and we just didn't realize you were in our midst. Now, somebody might think, well, yeah, maybe he'll see a little bit of porn, right? Maybe he'll be exposed to some things he shouldn't, but it's not going to destroy him. It's not going to ruin his life. That might be true. He might not ruin his life. He might not destroy himself. He might not get addicted to porn. He might not be mess himself up so bad that he can't ever have a sex life because all he's seen is all this nasty, raunchy stuff and thinks that that's what sex is and he'll never experience that in the real world. He's never going to see a woman like he sees on these videos. He might be impotent and, you know, completely ruin his life. Maybe that won't happen. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But even if he doesn't ruin his life, you know what he will have? He will have scars and haunting memories to suffer with for the rest of his life. That's what he'll have. I know what I'm talking about. Those memories, those images never go away. I could conjure up one of those images verbatim, if that's the right word, that I saw in magazines when I was like 10 or 12, when I found a stash of porno magazines somewhere. I could conjure up those images today, 30 years later. They never go away. Psalm 25 and verse 7. Yeah, so maybe it won't destroy your son, but it'll scar him for life. I can tell you that much. Psalm 25 and verse 7. Remember not the sins of my youth, nor my transgressions. According to thy mercy, remember thou me for thy goodness' sake, O Lord. David asked not to remember, the Lord won't remember the sins of his youth. And there have been a lot of men that have thought the same, that have said the same thing. They don't want God to remember them, and they don't want to remember them themselves. But it's pretty much impossible to forget. Jeremiah 31 and verse 19. Jeremiah 31:19. Surely after I was turned, Jeremiah said, I repented. And after that I was instructed, I smote upon my thigh. I was ashamed, yea, even confounded. Is that the verse that I wanted? Oh yeah, I just didn't read far enough. I was ashamed, yea, even confounded, because I did bear the reproach of my youth. I bore the reproach of my youth. And that's what every man bears that ever looked at pornography at some point in his life. And oftentimes it happens as a teenager. You bear the reproach of your youth. You bear the sins of your youth. So if no other reason to not get your children a smartphone, that's the one. And there are plenty of others, as I've already mentioned. Now, getting back to the evils of social media. These trans influencers, as they call them, on social media lead confused children into the cult of transgenderism. I'm going to quote here again from Schreier's book. She writes, ecstatic about being, quote, on T, unquote. T is testosterone. Ecstatic about being on T, pitying those who can't yet, quote, get access, unquote, because their, quote, gatekeeping, unquote, parents won't allow it. They are the undeniable drug and surgery boosters of the trans world. Many of them peddle misinformation, outright medical falsehoods, or just bad advice. They extol the glories of testosterone as it were, as if it were a protein shake, not a Schedule III controlled substance. They enthuse over double mastectomies as if they were no more significant than a haircut. They refer to skeptical parents as toxic and encourage their audience to upgrade to a trans, quote, glitter family, unquote. Yeah, it's not a glittery life. Just ask them about it after they committed suicide. Ask them how glittery it was. They coach you to lie to doctors by inventing a history of childhood dysphoria or omitting your own mental health history. They suggest that suicidality looms large, but can be banished quickly with transition. Better to transition right now before your dysphoria demons take or overtake you. I didn't watch these people. I don't want to watch them. I'll just take her word for it. She watched plenty of these trans influencers and saw what they do and how they deceive children. Parents must protect their children from these evil people before their children are destroyed by being companions of fools. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. And the sad thing is, I'll bet you if you talk to most of these parents and their daughter went trans, their parents had no idea she was watching any of this stuff. Because they have no idea what she's watching. She's on her phone all the time. How would they know? They don't pay any attention. It's not like they look through the history of the phone. They haven't locked anything down. Free access to everything. And they don't even bother to check what she's looking at. And even if you do think, I'm going to give my kid a smartphone, and then I'm just going to check his phone once in a while and make sure he's, you know, not been looking at bad stuff. You know your kids are a heck of a lot smarter than you are when it comes to technology, right? They're smart enough to delete their history and all that stuff. I mean, you know, you got to be pretty savvy if you're going to outsmart them when it comes to this stuff. Most parents don't know anything about it. Proverbs 13 and verse 20, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. When you're talking about young kids and teenagers, parents need to step in and make sure your children are walking with wise men and not being a companion of fools, especially fools on the internet. And parents must ensure that their children are not exposed to these wicked people on social media who lead them astray. Let's just look at a few more Proverbs. Proverbs 4, 14 through 15. Proverbs 4, 14 through 15. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, and pass away. Now you are responsible to do this yourselves because you are adults. Your children don't have the sense to do this yet. You need to do it for them. Make sure they're not entering into the path of the wicked. Make sure they're avoiding it and passing not by it by not allowing them to even go down that road in the first place. Proverbs 14 and verse 4. Verse 7, pardon me. Proverbs 14 and verse 7. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. See, you need to make sure that your children are not listening to fools on YouTube that are coaching them into these self-destructive behaviors and ideas. Proverbs 19 and verse 27. Proverbs 19, 27. Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causeth to err from the words of knowledge. Now, another major cause of this transgender craze is peer pressure and bad influences at school. Everybody knows about peer pressure. Everybody's experienced this when they were young. Peer pressure is harder for younger people, young children, teenagers, than it is for older people, but it can be very destructive for older people as well. There was a study that was done, I forget the guy's name, I think this was back in the 50s. My wife and I are reading this book called Quiet. It's about introverts. And a very interesting book. And she references this study that was done in the 50s. And I've actually seen at least a replica of this study done, where they would give you a series of simple questions or problems to solve. They would show you, you know, two lines, which one's longer than the other, or so, whatever, you know, give you a series of letters, which one comes next. And the answers are all pretty obvious. And when people took the test themselves, 80% pass rate or something, high percentage of pass rate. But then they took people, individuals, and they put them in a group where the rest of the group are actors. And they ask the group what the answer is, which one of these lines is longer. And it goes down the group, yeah, B is longer, yeah, B is longer, B is longer. And the guy's looking at it and he's like, I mean, clearly A is longer, but the guy's like, B. He goes along with the peer pressure. And like most people did this. Almost all of them. Some of them were just, I mean, the study, I guess, has shown that some of them were just flat out deceived. They just assumed, well, I must be missing something. Everybody else must have seen it. So they just assume, well, I must be wrong, and I just go along with it. In one case that I saw, you could see the look on the guy's face. He's just like, this is BS, whatever. And he's like, B. He just goes along with it just because he knew it was just nonsense, but he did it anyway, right? But a lot of people, it was just the peer pressure that their minds were actually changed to think something different, to think something completely wrong just because everybody else thought it. This is human nature. This is what happens to people. And this is what happens to these kids. That's how they get wrapped up in this transgender crap. It's because of the influence of their friends at school. The transgender craze among teenage girls is largely exacerbated by the bad influence of their friends at school. I quote again here from Schreier's book. Eventually, Dr. Littman discovered websites where parents were describing what would become to her a familiar pattern. A daughter with social struggles and anxiety, but no manifestations of gender identity issues in childhood, enters high school. She falls in with a group of friends in which many of the kids come out as, quote, transgender, unquote. The daughter makes a similar announcement about herself. Then her mental health worsens. Quote, they didn't find their true selves and flourish, unquote, Dr. Littman recalled from the parent reports she read. The daughters, quote, became more angry and sullen and hostile to the parents, unquote. The more they suffered dysphoria, the more they pulled away from the people who might help. She continues again in her book. This is on the next page or two pages later. She says, psychologists who study peer influence ask what it is about teenage girls that makes them so susceptible to peer contagion and so good at spreading it. Because it happens a lot more among teenage girls than teenage boys, and they're wondering, why is this? Many believe it has something to do with the way girls tend to socialize. Quote, when we listen to girls versus boys talk to each other, girls are much more likely to reply with statements that are validating and supportive than questioning, Amanda Rose, professor of psychology at the University of Missouri, told me. Quote, they're willing to suspend reality to get into their friends' worlds more. For this reason, adolescent girls are more likely to take on, for instance, the depression their friends are going through and become depressed themselves. And that does make sense to me. Girls are more understanding, they're more compassionate, they're much more likely to affirm or to, you know, to try to understand and to try to be comforting to their friends instead of saying, wait a minute, you really think you're a boy? You don't look like a boy. I mean, have you ever looked at your anatomy before? You know, do you realize that you have two X chromosomes? This is not what teenage girls do when their friend tells them, I think I'm trans, right? They say, oh, well, that's okay. I still love you and accept you how you are. And then before you know it, I think I'm trans too. What do you know? This is happening everywhere, not just in California and other ultra-liberal cities. My third cousin's daughter, who goes to a little rural school that I went to, I'm talking small. It was small when I went. It's a lot smaller now. My graduating class is 37, I think. Now their graduating classes are in like the low teens. And this is a very, very, very small school. 6 miles away from the closest town of 600 people, 30 minutes away from a town the size of Excelsior Springs, 2 hours away from a major city. I mean, I'm talking out in the middle of nowhere, in the boondocks, okay? My third cousin's daughter now thinks she's non-binary. Little young teenage girl. In the same school a few years ago, most of the girls in my niece's elementary school class claimed to be lesbians for a season. Like almost every girl, the whole class, you know, which probably wasn't all that many, I'm 10 or something or less. The whole class, all the girls except for my niece, thought that they were all lesbians in elementary school. How did they come to that conclusion? I guarantee you they're all running around with a smartphone. They're hearing all this garbage in the culture. Maybe it was even taught to them in elementary school. I don't know. Here's a quote from Schreier's book again. By the end of the seventh grade, Faith's daughter decided she was asexual and then trans. She had never even kissed a boy, had never yet gotten her period, but the new identity gave her both a cause and a team. Quote, all her friends are bisexual, unquote, her mother told me, a year after her daughter's announcement. Quote, there's only one heterosexual girl in her little crew. Everybody else is lesbian, bisexual. My daughter had to one-up them and be trans. Another mom, Angela, who sends her daughter to public school in Northern Virginia, told me the same. All of her daughter's friends at school identify as transgender, lesbian, or gay, or bi. It's peer contagion. Now, parents should be diligent to know what's going on in their children's lives and know who their friends are, because bad friends will make a bad outcome in a child's life. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Very important to know who your child's friends are. Very important to have open communication with your children. That's why it's extremely important to have dinner time at home with the whole family around the dinner table, and you can actually talk to your children. Find out, what are you learning in school? What are you doing in school? Who are your friends? What do you talk about? Just ask them questions. Learn about them. That's why it's detrimental to have hectic lifestyles where you never have time to actually spend with your children talking if you're too busy. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. You know why he opens up with be not deceived? Because most people don't believe that. Oh, I can hang out with fools and not be one. My children can hang out with bad kids, but they've been taught, right? They won't end up, you know, being negatively influenced. Be not deceived. I can tell you from personal experience that I grew up in a pretty decent home. My parents weren't perfect. None are. But grew up in a pretty decent home. Was taught good morals, right from wrong. Went to church every Sunday. Went to Sunday school. Did all that. Had good examples in my life with parents and family, and you know, my parents weren't, you know, running around drinking and partying and fornicating and all that kind of thing. You know, I had good examples generally, and yet when I went to school, I was the only, quote, Christian in my class, I think. There was one boy, maybe he would have professed to be. His parents were both Methodist preachers, his mother and his father. But he didn't seem to be overly religious to me. I don't remember having any Bible conversations with him. Not that I was instigating any myself. But all the rest of my friends, as I think back on it, it's really kind of shocking. I mean, small country school like that. I don't know of any kid in my class that was a churchgoer, at least to a Protestant church. There was a couple of Catholics. I don't remember any, especially my close friends that I spent time with, totally irreligious. My best friend, he thought, say, somebody said something about the devil, and he's like, oh, that Stan guy? He thought the devil's name was Stan, not Satan. He didn't even know the devil's name. I mean, this kid was completely ignorant, knew absolutely nothing, never probably stepped foot in a church in his entire life. And that's the way all my friends were. And pretty much the rest of the kids in my class, just, yeah, irreligious. As far as I know, I don't know a single one of them that was a church-going, like an evangelical Christian type of person. I can't think of one, except for the boy with the Methodist preacher parents. But. And then you know what happened to me? I got involved in all kinds of wickedness. Drunkenness, fornication, pornography, all kinds of stuff. Acted like a fool. It's because of my friends. I wouldn't have acted like, I wouldn't have done that. I was taught better than that. If I would have had decent friends, I would probably, I'm certain I wouldn't have gotten involved in all that stuff. You got to be careful who your friends or who your children hang out with. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Proverbs 13:20. Ungodly friends will vex and corrupt your children's souls. 2 Peter 2:7-8. And deliver just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Well, if a full-grown man can be vexed from day to day seeing the filthy conversation of the wicked, how much more so a teenage child? See, your children will learn their friends' ways. Proverbs 22:24-25. Don't be deceived and think otherwise. Proverbs 22:24-25. It says, rob not the poor, because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoil them. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. I read a couple of verses I didn't intend to there, but the last two are the ones that I wanted. You make friendship with an angry man, you will learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. The same is true of making friends with any kind of a sinner. You will learn his ways. He's not going to learn yours. You're going to learn his. It's not a two-way street. He doesn't learn your good behaviors and, you know, your positive influence. You learn his bad ones. I got a verse for you, a really, really interesting couple of verses for you here in a minute with regards to that. If you allow your children to be companions of ungodly friends, they will bring you to shame. Proverbs 28:7. Proverbs 28:7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. They'll bring you to shame if you let them run with riotous men. And my parents were probably just as naive as a lot of parents are. Think, you want to go spend the night at your friend's house, huh? Okay, sure, yeah, see you tomorrow morning. Was I spending the night at my friend's house? Well, maybe sometimes, but probably not. I was out running around all night, and then I was spending the night at some other person's house at some party. If your kids ever want to spend the night at the friend's house, let me give you a little bit of advice. Maybe call the friend's parents and ask if they're actually staying at the friend's house. It's amazing how stupid parents are. Really, it is. It's like parents somehow were never children themselves or something. And they're like, if he says he's going to be at his friend's house, why would he lie to me? Because he's a teenager. That's what they do. Now, to my credit, I wouldn't lie. If my parents told me, you don't be anywhere where there's drinking tonight, or I don't want you to be drinking or anything like that. And if I said I won't, then I wouldn't. But boy, if I could get out the door before they said, don't do some specific thing that I said I wouldn't do, if I could get out the door, it's free game. I do whatever I want. As long as I didn't have to tell them, I wouldn't do it. Now, I actually had a conscience. Maybe I was regenerate at that time. I don't know. But a lot of kids don't. And they'll tell you, oh, no, I won't drink. And they'll just lie right to your face and they'll do it anyway. Don't be surprised if your kids do that. Don't fall for the lie that your children can be good examples that will have a positive impact on the lives of their evil friends. Because this is what some parents think, oh, well, my child will be a good example. I'll send him to school. He'll be a good example to his peers, right? He can run around with these kids that are, you know, they're ungodly. They're not Christian kids, but he'll be a good example on them, right? He can positively influence them. Turn with me to Haggai. This is a really fascinating passage along these lines. Haggai chapter 2. This is back in the Minor Prophets. You might just have to turn for a little while until you find it, like me. It's after Zephaniah and before Zechariah, so probably three books back from the end of the Old Testament. Haggai chapter 2, this is really interesting. Verses 11 and 12. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, ask now the priests concerning the law, saying, if one bear holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with his skirt do touch bread, or pottage, or wine, or oil, or any meat, shall it be holy? And the priest answered and said, no. You're thinking, what in the world does this have to do with anything? He's asking them, if the priest bears holy flesh, flesh that had been consecrated and sacrificed, it's holy. If he bears it in his garment, and then his garment touches bread, or pottage, or wine, or meat, does his garment that has been holding the holy flesh, by touching other things, does it make those other things holy? And the priest says no. Right? The holiness is not going to rub off that garment onto other stuff. Right? Holiness does not rub off of you onto somebody else. Okay? Now look at the next question. Verse 13. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. Notice that? If you are wearing a holy garment and you touch something else, it doesn't make those other things holy. If you touch a dead body and you're unclean, you touch any of those things and you make them unclean. Your uncleanness will rub off on others. Your cleanness won't. The holiness of your children, if they have any, is not going to rub off on their friends. But their friends' wickedness will certainly rub off on your children. That's a guarantee. So you got to be very careful who their friends are. And when you see tendencies that your children are picking up from their friends, you've got to nip those things in the bud. And if necessary, keep them away from those friends. And keep them off the internet, where they'll learn all kinds of wickedness that you probably won't have any idea about, maybe until it's too late. So next time we want to pick it up, I want to finish this section on the gender ideology, and I want to talk about the part that the schools are playing in this insanity, and they are playing a big part in it. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.